Our show, Off the Hook, is a hacker's perspective on new technology. Will the newest phone or flat screen truly be beneficial, or will it be another tool of exploitation? Join Emmanuel Goldstein and his crew on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. and hear the perspective of the editor and publisher of 2600 Magazine, a source for the latest in tech security flaws. Even if you aren't tech savvy, you deserve to know if that new device will end up helping or hindering your life. Listen to Off the Hook on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM and online at WBAI.org.
The 5th annual Greenpoint Film Festival features a full slate of independent work by filmmakers from around the neighborhood and around the world. Among the selections include documentary, narrative, environmental, experimental, and social justice themes. Q&A sessions with filmmakers and actors will take place, a curatorial initiative bringing issues that intersect art and activism, engage attendees, and focus on issues of importance to communities. The Greenpoint Film Festival at the Screening Room, Wythe Hotel, 80 Wythe Avenue, Greenpoint, Brooklyn. For more information, go to greenpointfilmfestival.org. That's greenpointfilmfestival.org.
The New York Peace Film Festival will screen 10 films April 1st through April 3rd at All Souls Unitarian Church on Lexington Avenue at 80th Street in Manhattan. Wide-ranging topics include being illegal in America, being Iranian in America, finding a peaceful path under occupation, life and death after Fukushima, reconciliation of vets and anti-war activists in Montana, a retrospective of Scottish peace activist Brian Quinn's life, and getting teenagers from both sides of three conflict zones together to draw what peace would look like. For more details and ticketing, go to NewYorkPeaceFilmFest.com. Join us Friday, April 1st at 7 p.m. for our kickoff party. See trailers from films and talk to filmmakers. That's New York Peace Film Fest, April 1st to 3rd. All Souls Unitarian Church, Lexington at 80th Street in Manhattan.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for The Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about The Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh. Okay.
evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hi there. Happy Wednesday.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hi.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Well, here we are, another Wednesday. Another Wednesday has come and gone. Sorry for the confusion at the beginning. I forgot to even intro the show, but our CD broke. It has our theme on it. Thanks, Rob, for finding the theme on some other place on the internet. Isn't the internet great? You can find everything. But folks, you know, I've a slight bone to pick with listeners out there. A week ago, we went on the air and we talked about the Hope Conference, which, by the way, the Hope Conference is a brief period, 3 days, in fact, of sanity, sandwiched right between the end of the Republican convention and the beginning of the Democratic convention this summer. It's taking place here in New York City. Now, based on things that we've been seeing happening, this could be the last summer of this country or of the current system or whatever. Everything's falling apart, and we all know that dark days are ahead of us. These 3 days are, you know, we need this. A lot of us need this. And it's something to look forward to. Now, last week we were talking about this, how people can get a free ticket to the conference. And it was, I thought it was a very simple challenge. All you have to do is get some kind of a legal threat from Donald Trump, you know, make fun of his hands or make fun of his sister, insult him in some way, hack his website, hack his phone, hack his whatever. There are so many ways. You know, you don't even really have to do much to get him angry. And all we require is a letter of some sort, a cease and desist letter. It doesn't even have to be, you know, it doesn't have to go to court. It's just a threat of some sort. It has to have his name on it. You know, we haven't gotten a single letter. It's been a full week. Now, I know you can do this in a couple of days. People have done it. It's not that hard. And it's a free ticket to the conference, unless you're in prison. But hopefully that won't happen. I don't know, Bernie, am I being too hard on the people?
No, it's good. I mean, we did hear through the grapevine of some things happening, but we can't really share those details. But there, you know, I would think that, do we know of the Trump campaign suing anybody for any kind of anything, even unrelated to what we're talking, unrelated to our outreach?
No, it's a love fest.
I think it's not very much a love fest. I think they're suing everybody and everything. They're kind of like, Trump is kind of like walking Scientology. It's basically you question or say anything, and all of a sudden you've got lawyers. And just keep in mind, even if he wasn't running for president, how much of a jerk he is, and how easy it is to get him angry. So, you know, I thought it was a very simple challenge. I mean, yeah, we could have other kinds of contests, I suppose, but this was something I figured we'd have a winner by this week, and I'm very disappointed. I know our listeners can do more.
Maybe it's going to take some time for these plans and plots to hatch and develop.
Kyle, we don't have time. Time is not on our side.
Good ideas. They need to sort of incubate and grow in the right way.
Yes, Rob.
Well, also, this is going to have to work at the speed of Donald Trump's campaign's legal staff, and I'm sure they've got a lot on their plate. I'm sure it would also take Mr. Trump a very long time to write any sort of legal threats, what with his very small hands. But yeah, I think...
Oh, you're going for the ticket, aren't you? Okay, all right, good. This is the kind of thing we need to see. Absolutely. I mean, it's one thing to get blocked on Twitter. Everybody can do that. That's easy. It's real Donald Trump is his Twitter handle. You can just insult him once, you're blocked. Okay, but we need more than that. You know, we need something in writing, something legal, something with a threat behind it. And, you know, it's... And, of course, we can only offer one of these. So it's first come, first serve. Bernie, I think you had something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So write to us, oth@2600.com, with your attach the legal threat or whatever, or if you have any further questions. But this is serious. I mean, you know, I was practicing. Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, no, I was going to draw it into sort of some of the larger themes that that this is related to.
Mm-hmm.
What we're calling this is a world of Trump. What would that be? In relation to technology?
It's a very good question. Well, first of all, I like to conduct an exercise here, if possible. I'm very close to an exorcism, but I was practicing earlier today. Mm. You saw me.
Yes.
And it got difficult. It's not easy. But I can say something now that I could not say yesterday or even earlier today. I'm going to try to say it on the air now, all right? I don't think it's forbidden. President Trump. Yeah, I said it, President, and I can say it now without all those things happening when I tried to say it before.
You're getting better. You're definitely...
Can you guys say it? Can you guys say that word, those words together? Can you're sweating, Kyle. Look, this is a possibility. We're going to have to face it.
No.
Yeah, you see, that's where I was this morning. Mike?
I mean, haven't we given this man enough airtime?
Oh, but we're going to give him so much more. Well, this is what we're going to discuss. What will happen if this guy does get elected? What will happen to the world of technology? But first, I want to see, is anybody capable of saying the words? Bernie, how about you?
You know, I'm going to have the same trouble that Kyle had. I can get the first word out, but the second one I can't because
From Pennsylvania. You're used to unreasonable things and
I'm
nightmares.
I'm going to have to practice like you did before I can get it down.
It hurts at first.
Don't do it too quickly. That's my advice. Having been there, it takes time to get it right and to say it. But
what we're dealing with, what we're looking at, everyone, please listen up. I mean, what we're looking at is a future.
Uh-huh.
With the potential for Trump. And that's exciting for technology. And we want to know the way this will work. And part of that is, how will it work when, say, you are given a letter? So that is part of the contest here. We want to understand the technology of Trump.
Well, or lack thereof. Okay, so that is something that we were thinking about on the way in here, and maybe people have some ideas.
Yeah, and part of that is issuance of these letters, and we'd love to see one. So.
What would it be like under, let's just call it PT regime for now?
Yeah, that'll be easier for everyone.
People can probably say
just
that.
Just for the hypothetical here.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I'm sorry, what's that, Bernie?
As in P.T. Barnum, a sucker is born every minute.
Okay, well, you know, the parallels are remarkably similar, but...
Yeah.
We don't have to get into that. I'm thinking mostly on as far as the world of hacking, the world of technology. I see a very simplistic, heavy-handed approach. I mean, yeah, we've seen that in the past, but I see even more so in the future. Look at the recent Apple case and his reaction to that. If this guy winds up in the White House, I think it could be the end of. Freedom on the net in our country, of high technology being developed without fear. There's so many possible nightmares here of encryption being seen as something tantamount to illegality. And the thing is, he has a lot of power now. He will have even more power then. Mike?
On this issue, is there much difference, though, between him and Obama? I mean, Trump has, as far as I know, not expressed any position on this issue. Obama has, and it is not the position I like. On many, many other issues, obviously, Trump is worse. I don't want to say there's no difference in general between the two of them. But
on the
right to have information that the government cannot get into, Obama's position is about as bad as it can get, as far as I know.
Well, I think you might be expanding your boundaries a little bit if there is a PT regime. I would like to say, you know, can you think of a single leader in that office who would not say or do the same thing? I mean, I think it's just something that when you're president of the United States, yeah, you want that kind of control.
Yeah,
I think that's a given.
It's incumbent on you to interpret what kinds of resources investigative arms of the executive might want to have expanded, and in that kind of recirculates into legislation and stuff and that kind of revolving door of administrative officials and defense officials and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean,
it plays in.
The way I feel about it, I just think that even a President Bernie Sanders would be saying these types of things. Yeah, a President Elizabeth Warren would be saying the same types of things. That's just, there's a certain amount that you just wind up doing when you're President of the United States. But I think with Trump, it would be far, far worse, like unimaginably worse.
And that's unapologetic. What I'm asking.
Yeah, that we try to imagine what's unimaginable. Rob?
I think we're going to build a firewall and we're going to make China pay for it.
Yeah, stuff like that. You know, it's going to be so simplistic. Does he have an understanding of technology at all? Is there any indication that he does?
Is that better or worse? I mean, If we assume that the president, any president, is going to take the worst possible position, then maybe you want an incompetent one? I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, you know, we tried that with Bush, didn't we? George W. Bush. And we had 8 years of incompetence, yeah. And it didn't seem to help anything. People actually embraced it, which scares me because it shows that this kind of thing can happen. I'm the only one in the room. Well, actually, Jim's here, too. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
I'm the only one other than Jim in the room who remembers when Reagan was elected. And I think listeners will back me up on this, that people thought that was a joke. People thought that was, this can't possibly happen, this actor. Oh, that's right. You're right wing, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Don't mean to offend, but I think you would remember, too, that back then people thought differently. They didn't think of him as the magnificent man he turned out to be. Okay. Whatever.
Wait, what?
The point is...
Even Jim's laughing at that.
Perceptions change. Perceptions change over the years. And what's unfathomable today is normal tomorrow. And just look at our society. Just look at the things we're doing. Look at the state of schools where you have to go through a metal detector to get into schools. Look at the proliferation of guns everywhere. These are things that even 20 years ago would have been unimaginable. But they're normal now. When kids grow up in these environments, they think of it as nothing else they could possibly compare it to. So when you get a guy like that in the White House, that becomes the new normal, and our reality will change. And being at the cusp of high tech, I think it's going to affect us profoundly if that were to happen. And this is the time to start thinking about that.
Yeah, I think that part of that is the development of technology as being something that is normal, and that is timed with this. So if those two things were to intersect, it could very well influence the trajectory of maybe not necessarily the technology itself, but definitely its implementation and the interpretation of its use legally in this country.
Uh-huh.
But it's so that would be basically parallel to a PT administration would be sort of this normalizing. And I say that in the context of the mainstream, like what maybe mainstream journalists, like the sort of depth that they understand technology. I think that the conversation around it, like you can say an IP address in like a mainstream news article and people might, like they would know what that means. You wouldn't have to
IPv6
or IPv6
if you
right?
say one of those. I'm not sure,
but that's a part of this. So mm-hmm. How would sort of ubiquitous technology, how would that play in a Trump administration? So it would not be something you could deny. And the convergence of different things as information that's privately held about you in sort of government traditional coffers, right? Traditional ways of getting information about you mixed with like the devices and other platforms that give so much more detail about mm-hmm. our individual lives.
Rob.
And the thing to remember about any administration is that I don't think anyone's expecting the president, her himself, to be a sysadmin type of level of understanding of technology. But any president is going to just surround themselves with advisors and experts and people like that to try and clue them in on these topics. And we have to imagine sort of who are the sorts of people that Trump is going to surround himself with,
yeah.
and take external advice from. And looking at Trump's history with things like starting, false start businesses that never got off the ground, or like beginning to build some building somewhere for a hotel that ended up just petering out halfway through and never coming to be. And these aren't the actions really of somebody who maybe takes all the ins and outs of a situation into mind, or like investigates much of the realities of a situation when he wants to just go do something.
I don't know. I think his failed business attempts are his most endearing qualities. It's the pigheadedness and the bullying and the threats of violence that really worry me, especially somebody in a position like that. When he doesn't get his way, what is he going to do? Don't kid yourself. This is tantamount to neo-fascism in our country, and it's an important issue that it has not been taken as seriously as it should have been, which is why we're at the stage we're at right now. For those listening in the future, we just went past what they call Super Tuesday number 3, where Donald Trump won just about every state and is poised to win the Republican nomination. We'll find out, I guess, the day before Hope, which is kind of it's going to be really interesting. It won't overshadow Hope, that's for sure, but wow. I never thought I'd see anything quite like this.
But also, Mr. Trump has a particular background with technology that none of the other candidates have, which is that he made all that casino money. So, like, he was at the benefiting from technology that exists in order to fool people.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that I see them fancying it, right, enjoying it insofar as it serves whomever their interests lie with, and I don't know that that's going to be everyone in this country.
I know that it's not going to be everyone in this country. In fact, it's going to be precious few in this country. I'd like to know, yes, go ahead, Bernie, go ahead.
I don't know for sure that Hillary Clinton's positions on, for instance, this encryption issue would necessarily mirror her husband's, who was in the White House for 8 years. But William Jefferson Clinton pushed very strongly for key escrow, which basically means the government would keep a backdoor key to your information ready at hand, or have access to it ready at hand. That ultimately failed, but if Hillary's viewpoints are similar to her husband's, we can probably look forward to the same thing if she were president. Can I read just very briefly a brief quote from President Obama, what he said at the South by Southwest conference about this issue?
I would like you very much to do that, but first I would also like to invite our listeners to take part in a quick poll. For the next 10 or so minutes, we're just going to ask people, what is your idea for how to stop Trump from getting any further? If you have any ideas, because this is your opportunity to share it with the world. Our number is 718-780-8888. We have more to talk about, but I think this is an important issue that we should spend a few minutes on anyway. 718-780-8888, and just a reminder, if the phone rings more than 10 times, we probably can't pick up because you get transferred to Neverland. So I would call as soon as Bernie finishes reading this statement. Go ahead.
Okay. This past weekend, President Obama was speaking at the South by Southwest conference in Austin, which is a technology, cultural, music conference. Not as large as Hope, but it's still interesting topic.
Stop! It's like 50 times as large as.
Actually, no, it's not. I was surprised.
It's huge.
They've been artificially making it smaller and smaller because it has gotten so big. At least that's what I read. The last couple of years, they've been trying to like cool it a little bit.
Maybe I was reading about the number of people that were in the room to hear the president was smaller than Hope.
Yeah, that
anyway,
might be it. That might be it.
Or a parking lot
or something.
Well, here's what President Obama said. He said, quote, "If technologically it is possible to make an impenetrable device or system where the encryption is so strong that there is no key, there is no door at all, then how do we apprehend the child pornographer?" End quote. Then he said, how do we disrupt a terrorist plot? He went on to say that if the government has no way into a smartphone, then, quote, everyone is walking around with a Swiss bank account in your pocket, end quote. And then finally, he said, quote, this notion that somehow our data is different and can be walled off from those other trade-offs we make, I believe, is incorrect, end quote. To me, it seems like this guy doesn't really understand the technology, or he just figures government should really have access to everything.
Or it's the last couple of months of his last term, and he doesn't care, and he's just going to toe the line.
Yeah, he has no power anyway now, because it's his last year. It doesn't count, according to Republicans. Whatever.
I disagree. You bring up child porn. I think that right away is like a knee-jerk argument. Even if it's off the cuff or like a just, you know, random example.
No, child porn, terrorism, that's how you get what you want by always calling that up. It's a standard argument. But what people forget is that, we didn't have smartphones years ago. We didn't have the proliferation of data about us spreading all over the Internet. It's gotten a lot easier to track people down and to find out things about them. So I don't want to hear this nonsense about how it's suddenly hard to apprehend and investigate and things like that. There are more tools than ever. And yeah, you know what? There are some tools that protect privacy as well. Very few people know how to use them, but hopefully that will increase and people will know how to protect their own security.
I think the other thing he said about having a Swiss bank account in your pocket, like, I think that's almost like a little classist, as though, like, we're not allowed to have a Swiss bank account. all of us.
Oh, it gives me ideas.
Right? I mean, what's wrong with that?
A friend of mine who lives in Switzerland reports that they just don't let Americans open up bank accounts there anymore. It's too much paperwork. So, you know,
they can
do it. And they want to do it to your cell phone.
All right. So we saw people didn't follow my instructions. A lot of people called in, and they were all gone now because they got transferred someplace. Call us, 718-780-8888. We're looking for ideas on how to stop Donald Trump from becoming – well, I don't know. You know, I don't mind him becoming the nominee for the Republican Party because of something that Marco Rubio said about if he becomes the nominee, it's the end of the Republican Party. And I like that. That's good. But maybe that's too much of a risk to take if Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders don't launch a strong enough campaign, or if there's some kind of a scandal or something like that. So the idea is, how do we keep this from becoming reality? Because the possibility is very real. Let's take a couple of phone calls. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
How do you do? By the way, I have to tell you, Manuel, I've been listening to your show for, I don't know how many years. It's got to be 20 years.
Oh, you need a break.
When you used to play dial tones from other countries or busy signals. That's how long I've been listening.
Wow. Well, you're a trooper. I got to give you that.
I really have. Anyway, I don't know that you can stop Donald Trump. I don't think he's going to be able to do any of the things he says he can do once he becomes president, because running the country is not like running a company. There's too many obstacles for him doing. He could have a couple of executive orders, but like they were talking about when he was talking about killing terrorist families, the military isn't going to follow those kind of orders. So maybe he gets the NSA or the CIA to do it for him, but it's not the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He is a blowhard.
Okay,
and
but
as a blowhard, he's just saying things that, If you give anything that he says just the slightest bit of thought, you say, wait a minute, how are you going to take 12 million people out of the country?
So what you're saying is that he will not be an effective president. He won't get what he wants. But what we're looking for today is how to keep him from becoming president in the first place. Do you have any ideas on that?
Would you like Ted Cruz instead? I mean, what are your
choices? Really, no. I mean, that's a horrible alternative also, but we'll focus on him another week, maybe.
Yeah, actually, I don't think, I actually wrote something about the fact that Donald Trump is kind of like the Howard Stern of politics. He has brought down the level of discourse to just insults and things that are not really important, in the same way that Howard Stern started talking about farting and penis size and lesbians, and all of a sudden it's all over the media. Not all of a sudden, but over a period of time. So that Donald Trump now has turned politics from its patrician, the gentleman from Missouri is incorrect, to, you know, you're a nitwit. You know what I mean?
But people seem to welcome that change. They seem to welcome what they call honesty. And, you know, you bring up a good point. And actually, Donald Trump actually makes Howard Stern look like a good candidate. I would welcome that in exchange for this. Listen, we're going to move on to other phone calls. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening for so long. And I hope you continue listening.
Bye.
All right. Take care. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Anyone there?
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I was listening to your program. I just tuned in a few minutes ago about stopping Donald Trump, and I just want... Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you fine. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I heard earlier today that House Speaker Boehner would try to prop up Mr. Ryan. I don't know if you heard anything about that. It's kind of like, I don't know what there's a term for it, but they can vote in or put in somebody else besides Trump if he gets the nomination, or he's threatened to get the nomination. Did you hear anything about that?
Well, I heard a couple of things. I heard that Paul Ryan was suggested, but that Paul Ryan himself shot the idea down. So that apparently is not going to be happening. But the other thing I heard, which is more disturbing, was in an interview with Trump where he is suggesting that even if he doesn't get the 1237, the magic number of delegates he needs to win the nomination outright, if he has the majority and does not get the nomination, there will be violence in the streets. And that's something that, you know, we've seen before. We've seen this kind of thing before. We've seen the attitude of the mobs that come to his rallies, and that's worrisome.
Antichrist.
that's giving him more credit, I think.
Antichrist.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it, for sure.
Because if you look at it, people that are protesting Trump are not this homogeneous. You have white, you have students, you have Mexicans, you have Muslims. So he has to realize he's not intelligent, because he has to realize he's trying to divide people along lines of like race and class, but everybody's in this and everybody stands to lose. So
yeah, but
he seems like he's running for high school president. That's
that,
what
that approach has worked in the past, though, and it's my worry that it's going to work again in the future.
I don't think Trump himself actually is the Antichrist, only because if he were, I think he'd be doing that job much more badly.
I'm with what, some of what she said, but I do think there is some strategic fracturing of various allegiances and common at, like and different dichotomies in society. That may be just the right mix, kind of like what you said, E, as it having been effective in the past.
We have a full switchboard. Let's try to quickly go through, see if we have any other ideas here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up, please.
Yes.
You're on the air.
What I heard want to stop Donald Trump.
Okay. How do you propose to do that?
Correct. Well, the Republican Party has created Donald Trump.
They have created
Trump
him, yes.
Was degrading, castigating the President of the United States. The Republican Party shut them out. They didn't do a thing about it. Now they create a monster, and the monster is tearing them apart. How you stop that monster is by voting for Hillary Clinton.
Well, okay, that's the obvious way to stop him in November, but do you think it's possible to stop him before November?
I don't. The only way can stop him if these super PACs go to pour enough money onto that guy from Ohio, Governor
Kasich, yeah.
Yes, and if they can pour enough money at him, he can be stopped.
Well, that's the tactic they have been using, and it's a tactic that he's actually been pointing to as ineffective. They're throwing all this money. Florida was a good example of that, and it's not working. And people seem to like that. They seem to like somebody who, ironically enough, is a billionaire, but saying that the existing campaign system is bought and sold, and he's bucking that trend.
Trump has appealed to the lowest denominator in politics.
That's for
sure. The dregs. And that is what is happening, because he himself is dregs. He doesn't have the capability and intelligence to be a president of the United States. And the people behind him, exactly like him.
That's what worries me. There are so many people like that, and millions and millions of devout followers. Thanks so much for that call. Actually, I think that listener is in line to get the free ticket to Hope, because I think if Donald Trump were listening to this right now, he'd already be preparing legal briefs to shut him up.
Yes.
Wow. I can't believe how many people are calling in.
Yeah, this is great.
Well, I didn't want to devote the entire show. Let's a few more minutes, because we have other things to discuss as well. Let's take this call over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Oh, okay. That person is not there anymore. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello, good night, Emmanuel.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I was calling in response to your question about how we stop him.
Yes, please.
All right, you're a very intelligent person, so I don't want to sound like I'm playing with you, but I think the unfortunate thing is that, as I see it, I don't know that there is a way to stop him. I was hoping when he first came around on the scene and he started talking that, you know, just the fact that he wasn't really saying anything, that people would eventually, you know, those who are looking for issues and things that are going to help change the country or even move it along the lines that they wanted to go would be, you know, disgusted by the fact that he wasn't even saying anything. And then he started saying what he actually had in mind. And I thought that alone would have pushed people to the edge where, like, I mean, the kind of ludicrous, ridiculous, disgusting things and vile things that come out of his mouth, you would have thought by now the country would have been past that. The unfortunate thing is, like one of your callers said before, he's appealing to bringing politics to the lowest denominator. And unfortunately, there's a lot of the lowest denominator that exists in our country today. If he actually is going, I think what people should start doing right now is looking at options as far as almost treat it like it was, you know, the Vietnam War. Start thinking about how you're going to get to Canada or someplace else to to get out of this country. Because if that guy does win the nomination, there's a chance he might win the presidency. And the world is in trouble.
Well, the world's in trouble, too. And you know, the move to Canada was one of the top search terms on Google during this whole fiasco. And I don't know if that's going to be enough. Like you say, the whole world will be doomed. And maybe that's not going to solve anything.
I mean, as big a fan as I am of sort of fatalism and pessimism, I'm even fatalistic and pessimistic about the chances of that strategy succeeding, because these sorts of racist neo-fascists are popular all around the globe. We saw just this week the so-called Alternative for Germany party got huge amounts of seats in state elections.
Is that Pegida supported or?
They're the acceptable neo Nazis. I don't know how you want to describe them.
Okay.
They would describe themselves quite differently, of course. But you know, unfortunately, we're stuck on this planet, or fortunately, and there's only just so many countries we can move around in circles to in an expectation that strategy would succeed.
There's a lot of interest now in going to Mars, and I think. You have Donald Trump to get credit for some of that. Getting off this planet might be the best solution. Let's take one more phone call, then we're going to talk about other things. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, is this one of the reasons we should object to Trump is because he wants to ban encryption. And if you ban encryption, Americans can't securely order pizza over the internet. So I think that's something that would resonate with the voters.
That's a major concern, I suppose.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the last caller that regarding the lowest common denominator and appealing to that, they're out there, right, and they're looking for reasons to get reactionary and get riled up. That was one thing I heard in the conversation that speaks to this, and that's just it. It's like that's the kind of things people. Unfortunately, care about is if they can't get their pizza, then they're going to get upset about something. And this is the same kind of attitude. It's oversimplified and inconsiderate.
Well, he may be onto something here, because if people see how this affects their daily lives, how these simplistic solutions can completely wreck everything, they might actually start paying attention.
That's a good point.
Oversimplified and inconsiderate, I think, describes the entire Trump campaign.
Yes.
Oh, you really want that ticket, don't you, Rob? All right, thanks for that call. Thanks, everybody who called in. You can continue writing to us, at 2600.com. We'll take phone calls a little bit later on other issues, or if people really feel strongly, I suppose they can continue to talk about this. Mike, did you have something else?
I mean, I was just going to say the caller made that suggestion as a joke, but it's literally true that the electronic economy that we're trying to build cannot function without encryption. If the odds of fraud... were, you know, 50% every time you tried to buy a pizza, you could not buy a pizza online. And, you know, we have to weigh that. As trivial as it sounds, we have to weigh that against all the other things.
So, for the record, I don't think I heard one way to stop Trump.
Everyone has their opinions and prophecies of doom. But, yeah, that's sort of what I was looking for, to see if there were theories as to how to actually stop them. And we've seen precious few of those over the last few months. And I think there's sort of a perverse fascination with, well, let's see what happens if he actually does go further.
I heard some ways to mitigate the effects of Trump on you personally.
How would you do that? Moving
well,
to Canada? Is that one thing?
Yeah, like trying to get as far away from being at the effect of Trump, but... No real solution for stopping him.
The thing that bugs me is that he's from New York. Are we going to get blamed for this? You know, he doesn't represent... Folks, listen, he does not represent New York. New York's a wonderful place, and people like that are... Well, there are some of them, but we don't like them.
Let's say Vegas.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's okay. Where he should be from.
A little bit more appropriate.
There are nice people in Vegas. Don't get me wrong on that, but he'd be more suited there, and he's very comfortable there, too, I think. Okay, more things to talk about, because we do have other things going on as well. Did you hear this story? This is completely a different story, but I just thought it was very amusing. There's this guy who was riding around the commuter trains in Chicago, and he was arrested in an undercover sting over cell phone jamming, one of our favorite topics. Dennis Nickel, he's 63 years old. He's a certified public accountant. He had allegedly created his own personal quiet car in recent months with an illegal device he imported from China, according to prosecutors and Chicago police. Now, what's unusual about this is that he was charged with a felony count, and it was a really big deal for a couple of days. Unlawful interference with a public utility. Now, what's weird, I think, Bernie, you pointed this out. What's weird is that cell phone companies aren't public utilities, are they?
No, they're not. In fact, the cell phone companies fought very hard legally to not be public utilities, so they would not be regulated as such. So I'm wondering if this is a legal loophole. I actually called this guy's lawyer. He didn't answer the phone. I got his voicemail, and I just said, I hope you're looking into the defense strategy that the statutory language may not actually match the alleged offense or activity, because cell phone companies are public utilities. This is an example where old statutes don't really match up with the current situation when it comes to technology.
Well, you might have had some effect, Bernie, because yesterday prosecutors reduced his felony charge of unlawful interference with a public utility to a misdemeanor charge of tampering with communication services. So maybe maybe that voicemail was shared and they say, oh, yeah, we can't do this. And, logic seems to be prevailing a little bit.
Yeah,
interesting.
That point you made is it seems to have brought some truth, or had some truth to it after all, because it's the interpretation has been basically conflated with the traditional interpretation of the public switch telephone system's role and legal status. But these private mobile carriers are just that, private, and it's part of the reason why they have so much control and power over every aspect of the service that you purchase from them. They can change the prices, they can throttle, limit your data. I mean, of course, that's under a bit of scrutiny, I think, or I hope, I would hope, still, and has been. But all of those things that you pay for are not something that is being given to you in any way over a private service other than the spectrum. Is that right, Bernie? It's pretty much that's the only public part of a mobile phone system.
Yeah, that's pretty much right, Kyle. I don't know how many of us are old enough to remember tariffs where each state public utility commission would determine every year, or periodically at least, what the rates would be for local and long-distance telephone service. And it was set in stone until the company applied for another rate increase or decrease, which almost never happened. And then it would have to go before the State Public Utility Commission, and there were hearings and all that. Cell phone companies don't do that. They don't have to, because they're not public utilities. They just change their rates at will. Sometimes they charge you more than they even told you they were going to charge you, and you really don't have much recourse. So it's just interesting that the ignorance of the district attorney's office who charged this guy in Chicago didn't even seem to realize that the cell phone company this defendant was allegedly interfering with was not a public utility, but in fact a cell phone company.
Yeah, and this extends to towers and every part of their infrastructure. They have to go to different locales if they want to install new equipment and appeal to the local communities there. They don't have any sort of federal or regional site allocation or any kind of deal in there. They have to do that and negotiate all of that towers and the like on their own as a private communication service. So it's good to see that was changed in this case.
What do you think of this guy? I mean, kind of sounds like a jerk, the guy.
Hold on. I take exceptions because I've been that guy. When I first
you
got
draw to, your own conclusions. I didn't make them.
I had my cell phone jammer. It came from UAE, though, isn't that right, Bernie? That's
Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, was a great source for such things.
Yeah,
they're harder to get now, but if you search online for them, you can find them, and they will ship them to you in plain boxes marked as something other than what they really are. So
as testing equipment.
Oh, well, yeah, that's what they call it. But I think back years ago when I had one of these devices and I was on a train. And everybody around me was having these loud conversations with people who were not there, and there was no quiet refuge. There was no place to go. And it was just such a magical thing to be able to turn on this device and have the guy behind me just say, hello, 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 you know, about 18 times before he finally gave up and started reading a damn newspaper. And I was able to not have to hear details about his life. And you know what? It's for his own protection, because I jot down details of people's lives when they keep talking loudly. And, you know, I use them for future use. Who knows?
Birthday, I'll buy you a pair of noise-canceling headphones.
Look, the point is, we need to balance the right of people to talk on phones with the right of people not to have to listen to loud conversations that you know have no bearing on their lives, and to ride peacefully. And
I think
that.
You're absolutely right that we need to have a balance. I don't think the way to get that balance is to have angry people taking unilateral action, though.
Well, it's quiet unilateral action, and it's just, they can move
elsewhere.
This guy
was apparently enough of a repeat pattern that they were able to, like, track down, this is the guy who's doing it, and catch him. If you're just doing it, like, once a year, then you're probably going to get away with
it. It's true. Photos of him holding a device on Chicago Transit Authority trains had circulated online for months. So everybody seemed to know who he was. And, you know, if you see the guy, you just move to another car and problem solved. But he was arrested as he switched on the device as an undercover officer near him spoke on his cell phone on a southbound train. They really went to a lot of trouble to catch this guy. But, you know, how about you just subscribe to, T-Mobile, and then you won't have that problem because you won't have service anywhere on the train.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
I had a couple questions. I'm curious if he understood the implications of using such equipment in relation to the FCC and communication services in general.
Clearly
going
not.
Going into it. I mean, maybe not. Yeah, exactly. But and perhaps had he had a little bit more information about what he was doing and how it might be perceived legally, mm-hmm. He would maybe have been a bit less careless and more strategic in his jamming. And the other curious thing about this that I'm getting from this is that the CTA has cell service.
Well, I mean, it's outside, right? It's a commuter,
is it
a
above ground? Was it?
They say a commuter train.
Right? Okay, so it was not any. Okay, I read that as a underground system as well.
But underground systems have.
CTA is partly underground. I mean, they have. In the downtown area, it's underground.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah. The thing is, we just need to reach a balance on this. Where in Germany, people talk on the phone on the subway, and you barely hear them because they talk quietly, and because the subways are quiet too. For some reason, in this country, people are extremely loud and obnoxious. And yeah, you can expect a reaction to it. I'm not saying it's right or it's legal, but it's understandable, and people deserve to be spared from it. Yes, Bernie.
I mean, there is a danger with using these devices, however remote. For instance, suppose this guy was on the train and the train went off the rails. He was running his cell phone jammer, and the cell phone and the train went off the rails, as an Amtrak train did last year here in Philadelphia, where 7 people died. He probably would not be able to turn off the cell phone jammer had his car crashed, and then people would be trying to call 911, and that would have been a real problem.
Well, only people in that car would have the problem. People in other cars, presumably.
The range on these things is it really varies. But the bottom line is, it could cause a problem. However unlikely, that could be a problem. Now, he could have been charged federally. The FCC has regulations on that, but they do have the authority to fine and even arrest people. They've charged somebody like $10,000 once for using a GPS jammer, I think. So this is a federal crime, but he was charged under Illinois state law. But it does have public safety implications, and you never know when a situation like that could arise, like a train crash.
But is that implying that before we had cell phones everywhere, that all trains were unsafe and that we couldn't be safe because we couldn't call 911 immediately? You know,
not at all. I'm just saying that now everybody assumes that they can call 911 in an emergency, and if someone is using one of those devices near someone who needs to call 911, mm-hmm. they won't be able to do it. So that is a problem.
That is a problem, right?
Unlikely, it's a problem.
Yes, go ahead, Rob.
But legislating these things on the basis that there's something in a very small percentage of events that might happen, that might be some extremely bad thing, is dangerous. That's where you get things like encryption protects the child porn.
So jam wisely if you're jamming at all.
Okay, well, go ahead, Mike.
I mean, I just want to say that many commuter and intercity railroads have designated parts of the train which it's forbidden to use a cell phone. And it sounds like the policy suggestion here. This guy could have pushed for such a thing to be created on the CTA rather than doing it himself.
I'm surprised it doesn't exist there.
And personally, I find the people in those cars who shush you to be far more obnoxious than people talking on their cell phones. But that's a matter of personal preference, and I don't mind living in a world where both preferences can coexist.
Spoken like a cell phone user. But, okay, how about this? You're in the quiet car, and someone's using a cell phone. Do you endorse the use of a cell phone jammer in that case?
The system that seems to have been come up with is that if you even, like, think about talking on your cell phone, a very obnoxious person will come in and loudly shush you, and I think that is a fine solution.
What if there is no such person? It does happen. Sometimes you're in a train car without an obnoxious person. Is turning that device on?
I've never been in the quiet car without there being many obnoxious people there. I'm sure it happens, but if that happens, this guy seems like he has no problem being the obnoxious person.
It happened to Chris Christie. Governor Chris Christie was on the quiet car of Amtrak.
That's right.
And he was yammering loudly on his cell phone, and a bunch of people told him to shut the hell up.
Why do you think he lost the presidency? The quiet car block is very powerful, Bernie.
Well, people tell him to shut the hell up even when he's not on the phone. It's called the Christie Begone. And on that subject, do we think TV Begones are intrusive then? Because, hey, they're turning off television sets. People are watching TV. Maybe they're watching, some emergency program, too. And, you know, it could be a danger. We regularly promote TV Begone on this program. Are we saying that's wrong now?
That's a different thing. That's blocking just receiving a signal as opposed to an actual communication.
A national emergency, Bernie, supposing nuclear war was suddenly declared by, Albania, and President Obama's on television giving instructions, and then something happens, and some guy drops his TV Begone, he can't turn it off, and nobody can watch TV.
Does Albania even have the bomb?
No comment.
It's not regulated. The infrared spectrum is not regulated by the FCC or by any state law, but who knows?
All right. Hey, a couple of pieces of email that we've gotten from listeners. This from our friend Gonzo. I've been calling the Hotel Pennsylvania all week about reservations for the conference and not getting anywhere. You know, we've gotten a lot of letters like this. Let me tell you where things stand right now, because I just got an update today. There is a major problem with the group rate section of the hotel's website. So it's not just us. It's their entire system. It's been broken for a couple of weeks now. They're very flustered and upset about it. There's some kind of mapping issue is what they told me. Hopefully it'll be up soon. They're very aware of us. They're aware of our needs. If you have not yet booked a room at the hotel and you want to book a room, we suggest just holding off for a little while until we give you a go-ahead on that the system is fixed, or keep checking the hope.net website and clicking on the hotel section. And when that link actually works, that's when the system is fixed and you can get the discounted rate. Or you can just book a room at the non-discounted rate if money is no object. Or you can book a room someplace else, too, if you actually want to be able to book a room quickly. it doesn't affect the conference at all. The conference will be happening July 22nd through 24th. Is that that's a date, right? Yeah, okay. More information, hope.net is our website. And we are looking for speakers, people giving presentations on all kinds of things. I know we've gotten a bunch of submissions just on the topic of car hacking alone. We've been talking about that in weeks past, and it's really cool to see a big interest in that. We're seeing biohacking, you know, social engineering, all kinds of distributed denial of service attacks and ways to protect yourself against that, and malware and ransomware, everything. There are so many different conversations to have. Bernie, do you have something?
Car hacking is another topic that's going to be talked about.
That's the one I just mentioned, yes. The email address, though, if you have a topic, speakers@hope.net, but read the guidelines first on the speakers section at the hope.net conference. Hope.net website, that is. What else? We have a couple of minutes. Should we be taking... we did promise that we'd take a couple of phone calls. If there's anybody else out there, our phone number is 718-780-8888. Wish we had more time because we have so much to talk about. Rob?
But we should also mention that we're not just looking for speakers. We're looking for projects as well.
Yes. Give us an example of what a project is.
Oh, we've had all sorts of interesting projects at Hope in the
past. That's not an example, Rob.
Okay, then what was your favorite?
We asked you for an example.
Well, you brought it up. Bernie, I know you have lots of ideas for projects.
Well, there's a traditional project the online radio station, which interviews, which is just online. It doesn't broadcast over the air, but
Radio Statler.
Radio Statler, that was the original name of the Hotel Pennsylvania back in the day.
Statler Radio, yes.
Statler Hotel Statler, I think it was. Anyway, it's a really amazing audio studio that's set up to interview speakers and people who are running other workshops and guests and things and interviewing them. And it's just like being in a radio station. There's a table with microphones and a board.
Okay. That's one project. We have Lockpicking Village. We've got the ham radio people. We've got all kinds of
here's some projects.
Teaching kids how to solder.
Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead.
We will have an interesting project this year. I've been working with some folks. This may be the first hacker conference to have its own amateur radio repeater. There will be a repeater that anybody brings their UHF amateur radio handheld will be able to communicate with other people through a repeater, and there'll be Easter eggs, and you can connect with the telephone, do all kinds of fun things with it.
We have the Hackerspace Village, where you can bring your Hackerspace to Hope and have it represented in kind of like a camp setting, although you're inside.
In the past, we've had public terminals available for people. We've had telephone systems of various sorts on old equipment shown off.
We've had a lot of things. Segway Rides, of course, is another project. But if you have ideas, write to us, and we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
We can do that. There's a Capture the Flag organized, Capture the Flag tournament. Anyway, we said we'd take another phone call or two. Let's try to do that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello, Emmanuel.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Okay, so you're talking about stopping Trump, right?
Oh, we're still on that. Okay, yeah, go ahead, quickly.
Okay, so the thing that I was thinking was, I heard reports in the past of anonymous fighting from election fraud. They fought back and prevented the Republicans from stealing some sort of election or what have you. So this shows that anonymous, the collective, you guys, all of you guys out there, you have the power to influence and control these electric voting machines or what have you. Mm-hmm. So if it is that imperative, mobilize the forces. You can do this. You guys can get in there. You can get in the voting machines. You can manipulate whatever you got to do. And you can literally just stop Trump. Stop him.
Yeah, but that seems to be suggesting that voter fraud is the way to do it. Is that really the only option we have?
Well, I mean, you talked about some of the previous options out there, and it seemed like, the legitimate means are off the table. And I just figured, hackers, this is your thing. This is your show. And if we're talking about justice, we're talking about doing the right thing behind all the people out there, then I would say, yeah, man, that's just a tool. And if the Republicans are willing to use that tool to get their tool into the presidential chair, then we should be willing to fight back on the same level, on the same playing field.
I think the best way, I'm not really all for that. I think that definitely we should pay attention to electronic voting and have scrutiny and auditing and verification of what kind of systems these are. And I think this is a subject that's going to become particularly important as this election moves along here. We're going to be ever more interested in how accurate this is. But I think getting people to turn out and vote, just letting it run the way it ought to without fraud, I think is kind of the best I'd be able to hope for.
Well, it's going to be really fascinating the weeks ahead. Unfortunately, we're out of time tonight. I wish we could talk longer about this, but we'll have future weeks, and I'm sure things will get more dire then. Write to us, oth@2600.com. That is our email address. We will be back again next week with another action-packed edition of Off the Hook. Until then, it's Emmanuel for Off the Hook, saying, why is the cart machine not working? You didn't touch anything? You sure? Okay, I'm going to press this button. I think I got something there. Don't forget, take it to 11 whenever possible.
through 11 on the dial.
Ended a little early tonight, but hey, in the meantime, I'm not going for anybody. I'm not voting for anybody running for president who doesn't know who David Duke is. I don't care. You gotta know who they are. Okay, so let's see now. I have big praise out here to everybody who's celebrating the warm weather. And, well, you look at the time. It's 8 o'clock on Wednesday, which is always a wonderful time, especially when you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. And by it being March the 16th, it's time for the personal contribution.
Hello, world! Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key in the studio of WBAI in Brooklyn with our engineer, Stevie Deeby. And he forgot to mention that we're streaming on WBAI.org. So if you've got friends out there and they're not in the local broadcast area, hey, WBAI.org. And joining us on remote is my sidekick, Joe King, on remote. And we'll be taking listener telephone calls at the half hour. And just to let everyone know, that number is 718-780-8888. So at the half hour, we'll be taking phone calls. And we have a special guest on a little later. And Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing very, very good, Hank. Have you told people who our guest is going to be?
I'll let you do that.
All right, our guest is going to be somebody who has the sobriquet of the hip-hop lawyer, Sahid Buttar of EFF. You might not know him as a constitutional lawyer. You might know him as a DJ, because he's really more popular as that. But he's going to fill in an awful lot of information for us on a very, very, very serious problem that we're facing in this country right now, the conflict between security and privacy.
Well, before we start, let me just start off by saying that, you know, we're not in fundraising mode, but let me just say that, you know, we do have a WBAI buddy, and that's a year-round thing that we'd like to push just initially at the beginning of each show. And we ask that, you know, you can make a monthly donation. Joe, can you touch on that just very briefly?
The BAI buddy is somebody who has committed to to having withdrawn from his credit card or his bank account $5 or $10 a month, every month for 12 months.
$10 minimum, Joe, on the BAI, buddy.
$10 is minimum, but yes, there is no maximum. And you can make your BAI buddy contribution by going to WBAI.org and checking the home page there. There are a number of benefits to doing this. You get a BAI membership card, which entitles you to discounts at museums and theaters and things like that. But the most important thing is you're supporting WBAI so that you can listen to us every Wednesday night.
Good. And Joe, let me start off by saying that last week the FCC is proposing privacy rules for internet providers. And I said, oh, okay, what does that mean? I better find out what it means. And unlike FTC, the FTC cannot create rules for online privacy, but the FCC, which is the Federal Communications Commission, has a legal authority to enact safeguards that will allow an individual to have real control over how their information can be gathered and used. And that's quite interesting. So what they're going to be proposing is that the broadband providers can still collect and share data with other communications-related affiliates, but they cannot give that personal information to a non-communications entity. Well, we'll see what's going to happen. They're taking a vote on this on March the 31st. And, of course, it's a five-member commission, and they already know what the results are going to be because they're announcing that they'll be taking public comments, and they only take public comments if it got at least three out of five approvals. So that should...
They take the comments after it's been approved?
Yes.
Doesn't that sound rather...
No. It's a proposal. In other words, they're proposing it, and if approved, then they ask for public comment. And if it doesn't get approved, no sense asking for a public comment.
Oh, you're
comment.
Saying if the proposal passes
proposal.
The committee, then it
right.
goes to a full vote of the public?
Yes. No, not the full vote of the public. It's a full comments of the public, and then they will enact whatever they want to enact. Hey, listen, we have a person that can comment more on that, Joe. Maybe...
I have something else I really want to discuss with Mr. Buttar tonight, but maybe I can get him back to explain the nonsense you're talking about, which I don't begin to understand.
Hey, Stevie, do we have our guest on the air yet?
I'm being transferred to...
Oh, okay. He's still getting... he's going through switching on the phones to get our guest, but let me go over one more item. And that's, as we know, this whole thing with Apple, with privacy and security and encryption and all that, there is a two members of Congress, Mark Warner, a Democrat from Virginia, and Representative Michael McCaul, a Republican from Texas. They're trying to form a 16-member committee to talk about enacting new legislation for digital security. And their goal is that if once they get this started with 16 members, they say that they want to be able to present something to Congress in at the end of 6 months, or some preliminary data to Congress at the end of 6 months, so that it's not like one of these commissions where, oh, something's important, let's create a commission, and you know what happens?
Let me ask you a question, Hank, personal question, mm-hmm. me to you. You have voted for a number of congressional people, both senators and representatives, over your lifetime. Is that correct?
A short lifetime, yes.
I would imagine that you check a number of things about the person, whether they agree with your political philosophy, whether they have knowledge of American law, things like that. But let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever checked to see whether they're literate? Whether they know how to read and write?
Joe,
have you ever specifically checked that?
Well, Joe, just like me asking you, when you see a doctor, do you first ask him, where did you rank in your class as a medical doctor before you go to the doctor?
Very close. I asked him where he went to medical school and has he passed his American boards and his national boards.
Yeah,
yes,
but
I do ask that.
Yeah, but you know what? That is readily listed, but you ask where do you rank in class? Come on, it's the same kind of
question.
Not
interested. You're telling me rank and class is the same thing as whether they're literate, whether they can read the Constitution.
Now
I know where you stand. I don't have to ask any more questions.
If you're talking about being
literate, do we have somebody more intelligent I can talk to?
Joe, when you talk about being literate, okay, Are you talking about whether they graduated from college or
not? Whether they are illiterate, whether they know how to read and write. It's a very simple question.
And how do you determine that?
Okay, if you don't know that, Hank.
Well, no, seriously, how do you determine that?
That's why you have your political beliefs and I have mine. It's perfectly understandable.
Because,
no problem.
Like, Bill Gates,
we see if Mr. Buttar is on the phone yet.
Well, he's still working on it. And,
oh, my heavens.
Joe,
on it illiterate.
Bill Gates never graduated from college. Does that make him illiterate?
I'm sorry?
Bill Gates never graduated from college. Does that make him illiterate?
What do you think?
No, he's quite... I've met him, okay? He is very well-informed and quite up-to-date on everything.
He knows how to read and write?
Joe, yes, he graduated from high school. Okay?
Well, then he's literate, I guess. If he,
by the way, isn't that a requirement?
No. You can graduate from high school and still be illiterate.
No.
At least here in New York.
No, our standard for high school is you got to be able to read and write.
Say again?
Isn't that our standard for graduating from high school? You got to be able to read and write?
Not in New York.
Now that you're besmirching New York, I don't think that our educators in New York would like to hear that.
I don't care whether they do or don't. They have been known to graduate
at the bottom of their class, people
who are illiterate. And as a matter of fact, Hank, somebody that I know once explained to me why the whole college system was changed
many years ago.
Joe, obviously, I don't want to embarrass you.
One of the things that we do talk about, Joe, is that it's not the whether they're literate or not. Our problem is that we don't have lawmakers really writing the laws. They are taking things written by lobbyists.
Well, let me ask you a question. Can they read what's being written by the lobbyists?
Have you read the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, that's an excellent. It's the best thing that's happened in my lifetime. Well, not really. I was alive during some of the Rooseveltian years, but I was really too young to understand. The current act is absolutely excellent. Anybody who's opposed to it should really be put into a place like Creedmoor. Wait a minute. Don't you go to Creedmoor often?
Yes, I happen to be a trustee at Creedmoor. And
no wonder they're in trouble. They're really taking
over these villains, aren't
they?
Joe, I'm quite proud that I... I am compassionate with the mentally ill, okay? So don't...
No, you're not.
Joe, you're going into territory that you shouldn't be going into.
No, I've heard you talk about people who are mentally ill, except you call them Republicans.
No, actually, Joe, you are demeaning...
Sorry, Hank, anything you come back with now
just sounds
trivial.
Joe, anything...
Hang on, Joe.
You are demeaning the mentally ill... Joe, cut it out. You owe the mentally ill an apology for that statement.
Hank, let's go to Mr. Buttar.
Joe, I will remind you, you do owe an apology to them.
He's in charge of outreach for the EFF. He specializes in going out both to colleges and to communities where they need help.
Joe, hang on. Stevie's still trying to make a connection. So.
Right, so that's why I'm trying to...
No, then you could do an apology to the mentally ill for the way you demean them, okay?
I'll do an apology to the mentally ill, not to the Republicans.
Oh, come on, Joe. You know what?
Hank, let me talk about Mr. Buttar for a moment. He is a constitutional lawyer, but very interestingly, he's also a musician, a hip-hop musician and a poet. And he really is quite accomplished in that area as well. But what he does for the EFF is he specializes in going out into the field almost as an organizer. He has spent his life doing that. It took him quite a while to get through college and law school because he kept interrupting it in order to get involved in issues that we all consider important, civil rights issues. Regardless what side of the fence you might be on, these are important issues. Do we have any chance of getting him? Because if not, we maybe should go on to another issue for tonight.
Well, then I will go back to what I was talking about, is that Mark Warner and Michael McCaw, they're trying to form a 16-member commission. And the one thing that's different about this commission is it's not a commission to be a commission to be a commission. They actually have a target goal of coming out with some proposed legislation.
Well, every commission does that, Hank.
No, some of these commissions never hear from them again once they form a commission, okay?
No, not at all, Hank. You and I have both heard from and read the reports of many commissions. Many of them were valid, many of them weren't valid. But first, you have to have it's a political problem we're faced with, right? Let's get past
Joe,
that.
Joe, let's hope it's not like a Moreland Commission, okay?
Or a Kennedy Commission or any other big commission.
No, actually, the Kennedy
Some of the smaller commissions have worked.
Well, no, actually, the Kennedy Commission was actually, a lot of work was done on it, and they did release findings. Some people disagree with it. Excuse me,
some people disagreed with it?
Sure.
I can't imagine why anybody would disagree with such an incompetent. Oh, never mind. Let's go on to the next story.
Joe, you are now mixing a lot of metaphors with this, okay? Stevie, we have any luck?